Hi, this is Jim Swilly. Welcome to Metron Live. Metron is a Greek word that means sphere of influence. I believe in living your best life possible, and that's the reason for this podcast. This is my Metron. Now let me help you discover yours. Welcome to the Metron Live podcast, coming to you from beautiful, historic Midtown Atlanta in March of 2019. Metron people, would you give the podcast people a big hand and welcome them? My title for this month, I talked a little bit about this last week, but the official title is The Wisdom of Wholeness, Tuning into Wellness and Healing Your Life. I like the word whole, W-H-O-L-E. Sometimes in the Gospels, Jesus would heal somebody, but then he would say to them, your faith has made you whole. The implication being that wholeness is a little bit different than health or being healed. Wholeness is something that's it's higher, something greater to aspire to. You can get healing and then lose a healing, but when you're whole, what I interpret that is wholeness has to do with the way you think, the way you live, the way you eat, the way you exercise. It's not just one thing. One thing I really like about working out with my trainer, Stephen, and some of you have worked out with him, is he's not just about the physical. I mean, he's interested in, like he reads stuff like about emotional healing and that kind of stuff. Sometimes we have really good workouts when we're discussing those things. Like we're discussing, I just read this, whatever. So some of those conversations will affect what we're talking about this week. I want to show you some things in Proverbs. Proverbs says some very specific things about how certain things affect your body. And this is kind of where I'm going this month. I'm going to talk a little bit about a woman. Some of you, and Patricia, I've noticed you post a lot of her memes. Louise Hay, she transitioned in 17. She was 90. But I was reading about her because she wrote the book. She wrote a bestseller in the 70s called How to Heal Your Own Body. And then she wrote another book called How to Heal Your Life. And if you see, like if you read any of Dr. Dispenza's book, where the publisher says Hay House, that's her publishing company. And she writes a lot. She's really taken it to a whole other level about how everything that manifests in your body as sickness is connected to something. And I like that. I don't think it's an absolute. I think some things are passed down generationally, which we're going to get into a little bit of that this month. I am interested. I'm not that well-versed in the concept of epigenetics. If you know what epigenetics are, it's these guys like Dr. Bruce Lipton, I know you've read after him, and even Dr. Dispenza talks, they talk about the possibility to actually change your DNA, that just because something has been passed down generationally doesn't mean you absolutely have to take it. And so I'm interested in that, but one thing, well, let me show you these proverbs, and then I want to say something about Louise Hay specifically, because I'm not using her book as a text, but I will admit I'm influenced by this thought pattern. But let me show you this. This is Proverbs 3, verses 5 through 8 in the Amplified Classic. And he says, trust God from the bottom of your heart. Don't try to figure out everything on your own. Listen for God's voice in everything you do, everywhere you go. He's the one who will keep you on track. Don't assume that you know it all. Run to God. Run from evil. And then it says, your body will glow with health and your very bones will vibrate with life. Solomon, for some reason, talks a lot about bones. And I'm interested in that because I mentioned to you last week about my issues with shoulder pain. And even just some of the things that some of you have said to me, Doc Sheila shared a couple of ideas with me. Avery shared a couple of things. Just there's... you know, when you want to be well, when you want to be whole, you have to be open to, you know, a lot of ideas. If you tell me my chakras need to be rotated, okay. I mean, buy me a drink first, but I was even thinking about it today when, which by the way, the affirmations you put into God is so good. That was very powerful. But he said, raise your hands. And I thought, I'm so glad I'm in a community where we can do this and we can also do this in meditation. And one doesn't cancel out the other. They're all good. If one school of thought calls it my third eye, and another school of thought calls it the word of wisdom, I'm not going to split hairs with you over semantics. You're talking about the same thing. And this is where I think a lot of fundamentalists miss it, where they think, no, my way of expressing it is the only way. No, that's ridiculous. That's immature, really. That's like saying, oh, I could never eat carrots because I eat peas. I mean, it's like, that doesn't even make sense. You know, have peas and carrots together. They're all good. So I want to show you that one, and then I want to show you Proverbs 4, verses 20 through 22, also in Amplified Classic. He says, my son, attend to my words, consent and submit to my sayings, let them not depart from your sight, keep them in the center of your heart, for they are life to those who find them, healing and health to all their flesh. I like that concept. That to me makes me think of the word holistic. Holistic healing is about being well in everything. Let me tell you, just because you get some pain to stop, if you're still battling with depression or what, you're still not well. You're not whole. Wholeness means I'm good in my head, I'm good in my body, I'm good in my spirit. And that's one thing that a lot of these authors really connect the dots on. Let me show you these next two verses, and then I'll get to the meat of what I want to talk about. This is Proverbs 14:30, and this is in the Message. He says, a sound mind makes for a robust body, but runaway emotions corrode the bones. Now, that's interesting, because a lot of these teachers really connect the dots with things like arthritis, with bitterness and unforgiveness, that sort of thing. All I'm saying, and I don't want you to be defensive about things that you're dealing with in your body. Just be open. I never understand when people who are suffering aren't at least open to possibilities. You know, I've told you this so many times, but back in the day when I used to do street ministry every day, if it was raining, I would go to the hospitals. And I would just go from hospital room to hospital room. And it's real. People, when they're hurting, they're very open to being prayed for and that sort of thing. So I was probably 19 at the time, and I go knock on this door, and I go in, and there's a young man in bed, and I said, "Hey, I just want you to know, I'm Jim Swilley. I'm a minister. I don't work here with the hospital. I'm just going from room to room praying for people. I want to know if you have anything you'd like to pray about." And I noticed there was a woman in the corner said, who wasn't paying me any attention. She's sitting there reading something. And he said, "Well, actually, yeah," he said, "there, I have gangrene in my leg, and they're saying if they don't get this fixed, they're going to amputate my leg." And he's, I said, "How old are you?" And he's my age. And I said, "Well, you know, the scripture says if we lay hands on the sick, they'll recover." I said, "Look, if you like, I'd like to pray for you, and let's believe we'll save the leg." And all of a sudden, this woman came alive. She looked up. She said, "Wait a minute. Are you charismatic?" And I said, "Well, I mean, I guess. I mean, that's not the fullness of my label, but I could be labeled charismatic." She goes, "We don't believe in that. We don't believe in the laying on of hands." She told me what church they went to. "We believe God is sovereign. And if God wants him to lose that leg, that's God's will to lose that leg." And he's, you know, I'm looking at his eyes. His eyes are like, "Come back later and pray for me." And I'm like, that was his girlfriend or wife or somebody. And I mean, I left, you know, because I could tell, well, I sure don't want to mess with the sovereignty of God. I guess God's got a plan to make a 19-year-old lose his leg. I can't imagine why. But I remember leaving there just feeling so weird. I feel weird about it now when I talk about it 40 years later, 50 years later. Because I'm thinking, if I could potentially lose my leg in the next several hours, buddy, a Native American could come in. I'd say, dance a rain dance. You got a chieftain or a shaman or a witch doctor or a, whoever you got. You know anybody? Bring a Catholic in with the rosary. Let's pray it. God grant me the serenity. Now I lay me down to sleep. What's the blessing over the food we said when we were kids? God is great. God is good. Let him thank you for the food. Whatever. Ave Maria, something. Hail Mary, full of grace. Whatever we do, it's not a time for me to be fundamentalist and arguing with you about theology. Let's save the leg. I've mentioned this before about Doc, but one thing I appreciate about him, because I consider him a sage, and we have somewhat similar backgrounds, not totally the same, but we were part of the same denomination at one time. And I like that. If anybody ever calls him New Age, he's not defensive about it. That's very powerful. You know, I noticed, bless his heart, some of y'all communicate with Calvin Witcher. Calvin's got a whole thing going on because he intentionally called himself a witch. I don't know if you've seen it. So CBN wrote an article about him, and he texted me this week, says, I hope this isn't causing you unnecessary trouble. I want to say, y'all need to stop this, because I know what you're saying, but just the word witch has a negative connotation. I know what you mean by it, but you're making it difficult on yourself by saying, you know, that's your fight. If you and Rutherford and all you guys, if y'all want to fight, that's fine. But I'm more of your way of thinking. Like, yeah, New Age, whatever. Charismatic, okay. One of the things in Medea, something happened where she spoke in tongues. And it was funny to me, because it's like, yeah, well, okay, I'm that too. I'm connected to all things. But especially when it comes to your health, you know, you don't have to get all, you don't have to read 1,000 books about emotional healing or whatever. But I tell you one thing, if you're defensive about it, that's a very good indication that maybe you need to hear this kind of teaching. And sometimes, I will say this, like if you've lost a loved one or a loved one has a certain illness, it's easy to have some kind of emotional sense to protect them, to say, you know, because what people hear is, you're saying this is my fault. Look, blame is not, if you hear blame in anything I ever teach, then you have no clues to who I am. Blame's not even in my consciousness. I never teach this way, ever. Even back in the day, I never taught that way. I'm always about, well, let me bring you this information, and maybe this will help you. Because if you're suffering, why not be open? Why not be like when Jesus said to his disciples, they that are not against us are for us? Now, the reason I'm saying this about Louise Hay, because I was thinking, I know more about her through other people. And she was really strong on affirmations and making people say them, you know, which is very much like those of us who were part of the Word of Faith movement, what we called positive confession, whatever. But I was reading a little bit about her biography, and she had a really terrible life. I mean, she was raised by a single mother. She was raped when she was 5. When she was 15, she had to drop out of high school because she was pregnant, and she gave the baby up for adoption. Then somehow she went to New York and changed her name, and she became a model. She worked with Bill Blass and some of these ones that were really big in like the 60s and 70s. And she started going to they didn't call it New Thought, but I know that's what they mean. Like the Church of Religious Science, and it kind of they started teaching her about changing her thoughts, and it really changed her outlook The last part of her life, she had this really powerful impact on the world. And so I was thinking about some things about her story made me think of Dr. Dispenza's story. Because if you know about how he got into the idea of how you can heal yourself, you know, he was a chiropractor, but he was also a cyclist. And he had years ago, he had a terrible accident on a bicycle and broke 6 or 7 vertebrae. And he was, if I remember correctly, he was paralyzed, maybe from the, I don't know, he was paralyzed. So he goes to osteopath? Is that what he would go to? I don't know. Well, whoever it was, he said, as the guy was telling him about his vertebrae, he said, I could tell I know more about how my body works than this doctor knows. Now, I'm not saying you know more than doctors, but he was, that is what he did. And as this doctor was telling him the kind of surgery they were going to do, he said, this isn't going to, you don't understand what's happened to my vertebrae. I've got to deal with this myself. Now, I'm not telling you not to go to doctors, but I'm saying in his case, he went home and began to understand how to change his mind and change his DNA and completely changed his own body. Now, the reason I'm mentioning those two people is I've always believed that revelation can't be grandfathered in. Louis Hay could give powerful vibratory teachings about how thoughts can change your mind, because she came from such a desperate situation that I would imagine it would be her only hope. When you're raped at 5 years old, that's got to do something to your head. So the idea of, you could say, well, I don't believe in that new thought stuff. Well, you know what? You might not have had that kind of experience. You might not have been in as desperate a situation to understand why somebody like her could see it as a lifesaver. Because I could tell you, I grew up in church, and the only thing we ever heard about your thoughts was don't think lustful thoughts. That's the only thing you ever heard. Basically, the extent of thought teaching was don't think about sex. You know, that was pretty much it. So the idea, like I remember from where I came from, and I'm not throwing my upbringing under the bus. I mean, there's a lot of positive things about Pentecostalism that I love, and you know, the supernatural and out of the box. And all that. So I don't hate any of that. I love every part of my life. Like that meme I posted this week: you can't love yourself and hate the events that shaped you. But I do remember when I was 13, just starting in the ministry, my youth pastor took me to Alabama to hear Kenneth Copeland. I never heard him before. And I've kind of moved away. Kenneth Copeland now has become too political for my taste or whatever. But there was a time, what really affected me is I'd never heard somebody be so positive about Christianity. My idea was, let's just don't go to hell. Don't go to hell, don't miss the rapture, don't let the devil get you. I mean, that was basically my theology. But his idea was, you can change situations, you can speak to the mountain. And I just remember new neuropaths in my brain opening up. I was like, wow, you mean you're saying you want to be a Christian because you want to be? Not because it's this or hell. I mean, that's a really sorry way to be a Christian, you know? Can you imagine somebody saying, I don't really love you, and I can't stand you, but I don't want to be alone, so I guess I'll marry you. You know, I need somebody. I need insurance. Let's get married. Like, oh, baby, that's really romantic. I mean, that's the way a lot of people are about, well, sucks being a Christian, but it beats going to hell. So, okay. So I liked where I was coming from. It wasn't what he said so much as it was just this really positive vibration. I was responding to the vibration, not to the words, because he was talking about power of words and in ways that I remember thinking, I don't even know what you're talking about, but I like the way that your words make me feel. Your words are giving me some kind of energy that I'm very attracted to. So I can understand why a Joe Dispenza would say, I can't go to the surgeon, he's going to make things worse for me. Because he's coming from, I mean, that's what he knows about. He knows chiropractic. He knows how the body works. So what I'm saying is I can teach you all of this, but you have to find your own revelation. And I would never tell you, like if somebody says, well, I'm going to stop taking my medicine because so-and-so, I'm like, no, don't do that. Because if that's not your personal revelation, there's not going to be enough energy to push you over. It's got to be your personal epiphany. You got to have that moment, that Scarlett O'Hara moment where you stand up and say, as God is my witness, I'll never be hungry again. That she was saying that out of this idea of, I don't want to starve anymore. There's got to be something that pushes you to say, there's got to be a better way. And if you're going to argue with people who offer you other ideas, then you're cutting yourself off from your own possibilities. Like sometimes people will tell me something about, maybe you should try this, you know, this food is an anti-inflammatory, whatever. Why would I say, don't tell me about it? I would rather say, okay, I'll look into that. It doesn't mean I'm going to go home and change everything about my life, but it means, well, this is somebody who said something to me that they're trying to help me, and there may be something in there. Maybe not the whole thing of what they're saying, but there might be something about it. I mean, I want to pay attention. Last night, I'm just going to be real with you here, like I wasn't before. Now I'm going to be real. I opened some ibuprofen, and Ken said, how many do you want two? I said, no, give me three. And he said, do you think you're taking too much ibuprofen? And he would never, that's out of character for him to say. I said, what do you mean? I said, well, that's what they give you in the hospital. Because I'm just used to popping three. He's like, well, if two are good, three would be better. Now, this is interesting. Just from that little thing, when I woke up this morning, in my Facebook feed was a thing about how too much ibuprofen is bad for you. And I thought, well, that's interesting. I know Tylenol is, but, you know, and I thought, well, that's interesting that we just, I said, why did you say that? He said, well, I don't know. I just said, I hope you're not taking too much. And just that little bit, well, he wasn't yelling at me, but just that little bit made me think, well, wisdom may be crying in the streets. Maybe I am. Maybe this is a habit for me just to say, if this is hurting, let me just do this and it won't hurt anymore. Maybe there is a better way. And I want to be open. Do you know what I mean? I don't want to be, nobody wants to be lectured to. Nobody wants, you know, all you can do is get a word, especially from somebody that you have a spiritual connection to, that you trust. And it was just that very, that it's real. I don't think in the whole 7 years we've been together, he has ever said anything about what I do or what I eat or whatever. It was just, you sure you want three? And I thought, well, that really, that got my attention. Maybe I am taking too much. And I hadn't even thought about it because it's just like, oh, I'll just pop those and I'll go for my workout and whatever. Well, that might not be the best thing for me. And I was reading about it today. I thought, wow, there's, okay, some of those symptoms that you're even talking about, what it can do to the lining of your stomach or whatever. I thought, well, okay, that's, yeah. So, what does that mean? Does that mean I'm going to be in pain? No, it means, well, I've got to find alternative ways to think about this because I want to be well. And, you know, Natalie's not here all the time, but she's said a lot of stuff to me about yoga and stretching. And I haven't done it yet, but I've looked at it. I'm like, okay, well, that's interesting. I can't imagine contorting my body like that. But then the other day I'd taken my parents to the doctor and I'm sitting in the waiting room and there's something came up in my feed. The feed thing is freaking me out because there are things I know I have not looked them up online. Now, that I can understand. Like if you're shopping for something online and then those shoes appear, that, but there's things I've just talked about that have appeared in my feed. I'm like, what is that? Siri, what is that? But anyway, it was this woman, what was she, 104? And she's like in incredible physical shape. And it showed her, she's an English woman, it showed her out on her front lawn doing yoga. But the thing that caught my attention, she says, I didn't start doing yoga until I was 90. I thought she was going to say, I've done yoga my entire life. So I could read that and think, well, it's too late for me. The yoga train has passed. I thought, you started it at 90? And she's like on her front lawn as a like in a pretzel. I'm like, okay, well, that just gave me a new neuropath because I didn't know that was possible. You know, sometimes you'll see something or hear something, think, oh, well, I didn't know that was possible. That's why anytime you see somebody that says they're 103 years old, everybody applauds. You know why? Because we're glad to hear it's possible. Oh, people live that long? Okay. You always get an applause line for that. Or if somebody's been married for a long time, you're like, okay, marriage, maybe marriage can last that long. So, having said all that, let me show you this. Let me show you one more scripture. This is 3 John 2, and this is out of the Passion Translation. And it's just, beloved friend, I pray that you are prospering in every way and that you continually enjoy good health just as your soul is prospering, or in direct proportion to the health of your mind. Because your mind, your emotions, all of it's affecting your body. All I'm asking you this month is just open your heart to this stuff. I'm not talking about your mother who died of whatever, or your aunt who's got whatever. I'm not blaming anybody. I'm saying, if we want to be well, let's just open ourselves to possibility. And I'm including myself in that. I'm saying to myself, all right, maybe there's a better way than me taking too much ibuprofen. That's not good for me. Because I started thinking about it this morning. I thought, well, I actually do take it a lot. You know, I do. I'm just in a habit of, if something hurts, you know, I'm goal-oriented. Like, well, let's get rid of that pain and move on about our business. And it may not be the best thing. All right. Now, here's a quote by this Louise Hay. She says, now, when I hear about someone's illness, no matter how dire their predicament seems to be, I know that if they're willing to do the mental work of releasing and forgiving, almost anything can be healed. Her writing's very much about, she nearly puts everything into the forgiveness column. Now again, this may come from the fact that she had such horrible situations growing up. But in her, and she lived to be 90 and went very peacefully in her sleep with no sickness or disease, no struggle. I would have loved to say she lived to be 120, but 90 is pretty good, especially going peacefully in your sleep. So I'm going to pay attention to what she said. And her whole thing was, I couldn't get well till I forgave people. Now, let me finish this and I'll talk about it. She says, the word incurable, which is so frightening to so many people, really only means that the particular condition cannot be cured by outer methods, and that we must go within to effect the healing. The condition came from nothing and will go back to nothing. Now, I do remember this. A few years ago, somebody very close to me from the early part of my ministry had passed away, and I was going to go to the funeral. And I was, I remember I got up and got ready, I got dressed, and I was really feeling very strongly about going. Like, I really want to go to this funeral. There's some people I want to see. There's some bridges I want to build with people. This was a few years ago when a lot of transition was happening in my life, and it was important to me to go to this funeral. So I left in plenty of time. I wasn't rushing. I knew the funeral home I was going to. And I pulled up. I think about it every time I go to this red light. And this woman who was texting just plowed into me from behind and hit me so hard that it made my car hit another car. And so there's no doubt I missed the funeral. And I had a whiplash, and I went to Dr. Sheila about it and did all that stuff. But I remember at night I would lay down and my neck was hurting so bad, and I would think about that woman. I was like, oh, that I was like so mad at her. Like, why was that stupid woman texting? It wasn't just that she hit me. It was like, you made me miss this event that I really wanted to go to. And it's just, I was just mad at her, and I'd lay there and I'd be in pain. And one night, I remember laying there and thinking, I've got to forgive this woman because this neck pain, I'm not saying whiplash isn't real. I understand the physical thing that happens. But I thought, I've got to disconnect from this because this anger I'm feeling toward her, this emotion is connected. All these dots are getting too connected. I feel the pain. I think the thought. I have the emotion. I'm like in a cycle here. And the more I think about it, the more this thing hurts. You know, it's like I think about it, so it hurts, then it hurts, so I think about it. Yeah, well, yes. Pain comes from your brain. It's a signal from your brain telling your body to feel a certain way. And I remember laying there one night and thought, I've got to forgive this woman. And I laid there and thought, you know what? Whether you should or shouldn't have, you've texted and driven too. That could have happened to you. I know you shouldn't, but I have done it. It's, you know, she was very sorry that she did it. I'm going to have to let this go. Now, I'm not saying it went away immediately, but within about 72 hours, I could feel it didn't hurt anymore. Now, I have other things to deal with, but that thing stopped. And I could see this is definitely connected to an emotional blockage that I have. Now, let me tell you something about these emotional blockages. You can have them for so many years. There's so much a part of your makeup that you don't even realize you're thinking it anymore. I mean, you can hate somebody or be mad at somebody for so long. It's the way you've thought for so long that you're addicted to that feeling now. You don't even realize that this makes you feel like you to have that thought about that person. So if somebody says, you're addicted to unforgiveness, like, no, I'm not. No, you're addicted to feeling like yourself. And you've felt that way for so long, that being mad at that person just feels familiar. So that when you don't have that thought, and come on, baby, any of us who've ever been through divorce or breakups or being fired from a job or whatever. You know, I remember back in the 70s, I don't know if y'all went through this, but inner healing was a big deal. I remember when Jimmy Carter got elected, his sister Ruth Carter Stapleton was kind of a big advocate of inner healing. That became a big thing where people would go through the healing of memories and you would visualize Jesus walking through your childhood and saying certain things to you. And, you know, it is what it is. It helped a lot of people. That seems to have kind of gone out of fashion. I think now Christians are more political and just, you know, want to be mad at other people. Like the charismatic movement I was part of, I don't recognize anymore. I'm like, y'all used to be a lot more fun than you are now. Now you're just mad at gay people all the time. Like, so I just want to explore that. I'm not trying to get everybody to unearth a lot of stuff that doesn't need to be talked about anymore. But the people in your life have definitely influenced you. And here's the thing about forgiveness. Forgiveness, please hear this if you don't hear anything else. Forgiveness isn't justifying what the other person did. That's what makes people, they get hung up. Because they're saying, oh, you're telling me it's okay that he beat me or whatever. Like, no, I'm not saying that. I'm saying he owed you a debt that's not going to be repaid. You're going to have to release that debt. Because you can keep sending creditors to him. He's not going to, especially the people that don't even think they did wrong to you. Some of the people who have hurt me the worst don't even think they did anything. So that brings in that whole Father, forgive them for they know not what they do piece. You have to, because if you heard their story, they would think, oh, he deserved that. What are you talking about? So there's some things other people are never going to see it the way you see it. You can sit down with them and explain it for hours. They are still going to have their worldview. So you've got to figure out a way to stop blaming them and start trying to understand yourself. Why am I responding to this person? This isn't about what they did. If it's even in your conscience to say, oh yeah, well you don't even know what they did, then you're not even near, you're so connected to ego, you're nowhere near being healed. And if it hadn't got you yet, it will. And when the doctor says to you, we found a lump in your so-and-so, you can go, oh, I remember when he said I should let that go. I'm just telling you, you got to stop it now. It's just true. And again, it's the releasing of the debt. Let me show you. This is a quote by, it's a meme. I think this is interesting. It's the University of Texas Health Science Center at Houston. It says, feeling sad can alter levels of stress-related opioids in the brain and increase levels of inflammatory proteins in the blood that are linked to increased risk of comorbid diseases. I looked up comorbid. It means when more than one thing is happening in your body at the same time. Diseases including heart disease, stroke, and metabolic syndrome. Do you understand what that's saying? This isn't Louise Hayes or Joe Dispenza or Deepak Chopra. This is somebody coming from an entirely scientific medical standpoint who's saying sadness makes you sick. And then sadness makes you sick, and then you're sad because you're sick. You know, like it's like it does. And then I'll show you this quote by Dr. Dispenza. It says, "We've in fact conditioned ourselves to believe all sorts of things that aren't necessarily true. And many of these things are having a negative impact on our health and happiness. We're addicted to our beliefs. We're addicted to the emotions of our past. We see our beliefs as truths and not as ideas that we can change." Now, let me explain my MO on something. Because I have other people that I'm very close to that I love, and their journey is their journey. But I see the arguments that they get into over belief systems and defending certain ideologies. And if that's their journey, that's fine. The reason I don't argue over what I believe or who I am, like even when somebody says, like the Methodist Church met last week and, you know, at their whatever they call their big convention, because it came up before them, should we allow same-sex marriage and openly gay clergy? And they voted against it. It was kind of a step backwards for them. So all these people that I'm friends with on Facebook, I saw all the things they were posting about it and whatever. And I don't have my head in the sand, and I understand what was Dr. King's famous quote about it. It won't not be the voices of your enemies, but the silence of your friends. I understand that if you don't speak out about certain issues, you're compliant in the problem. I get that whole thing. But let me tell you where I am on all of this. I don't want to argue with you about hell. If you want to believe in hell, hell it up. I don't care. I don't care if you believe it. I don't even care if you preach it. Oh, you shook it. No, I don't care. It's a free country. If people want to go hear a guy talk about hell, enjoy. I don't care. You shouldn't pay tithes to him. I don't care. Buy him an airplane. I don't care. It has nothing to do with me. Seriously. I'm detached from it. Is homophobia real? Yeah. Yes, it is. But for me to have to defend who I am all the time implies that I think there's something wrong with it. And I don't. I not only don't think there's anything wrong with it, I think when people say, "You chose it," well, probably before I got here, I did. So to me, I just post pictures. Like yesterday, we were walking up to the Westin, and I said, "Put my phone here, let's take a picture." Snap, took a picture. That's my statement. It's like, look at my life. Here I am. If I'm making any statement at all, it's like, and the other pictures are me with his grandkids, him with my grandkids. That's our life. If I'm going to make any point at all, that's it. It's like, yeah, we're good fathers. Our kids love us. He was with Brandon Thursday night. Didn't get home till midnight because something was wrong with Brandon's truck. He had to get a new one. He didn't even get home till. Because that's his kid. That's what you do. We're still fathers. Whatever. I don't need to argue with you over whether gay men should be fathers or not. We already are that. It's like it's stupid. I'm living in a different, like for me to have to come down to your vibrational frequency to try to explain that to you is only going to irritate you, and it's just going to waste my time because it's not going to change what you basically feel. I'm not saying racism doesn't exist. I'm not saying that whatever you want to fight, fight it. I'm just saying if that's all you do all day long is fight something, the implication is you think something's wrong when really, for me, I'm not telling you what to do. I'm saying a better way is just to live your life. Just to live your life. Now, if you're dealing with discrimination on your job or something like that, by all means, speak up, push back. I'm not telling you just to be a victim. I think you all know I'm not implying that at all. I'm saying the way you live your life. I remember exactly. Right. If you didn't hear what Sonya just said, she says, because of sitting under you, she says, we don't even defend you anymore. Because every once in a while you'll hear somebody say, oh, are you still connected to him? And you know the implication of the question. And they're like, yeah. And you're right. Go to St. Simon's. And that's precisely my point. Like, and this doesn't even happen anymore, but I used to, when this used to happen a lot, even before I came out, even just with Church in the Now, and when people would say, I just want you to know, I got into a thing with somebody this week about work, you at work, and I defended you, and we fought. And I used to say, there was a time I kind of, you know, dug it. I'm going to tell you. I was like, well, thanks for sticking up for me. And now, if somebody said that to me now, I'd be like, no, just don't do it. All you're going to do is stress yourself out. I'm fine. We're fine. It absolutely gives it energy. And to be able to say, I understand why you don't get this. I understand why you think this is wrong. And I'm not asking you to change your mind. You be you, boo-boo. You know? And enjoy. If y'all want to talk about hell and everything, whatever. That's one of the great things about America. We have, you know, freedom. So be free, baby. I'm fixing to go meditate on St. Simon's with my gay bishop. Bye. You know, like, how many things with this statement, how many things with this statement are triggering you? Well, you know, he's kind of new agey. Yeah, he seems to be getting more and more that way. And it's just, it's so liberating to say, oh, yeah, that, to get to that place when somebody says, well, you don't know, you know, it doesn't matter. It doesn't matter. You could just give me articles about, you know, false teachers or whatever. Like, I'm a grown up. And when you, the more you walk in that, the less defensive you are. Somebody says, well, you don't even know what they were saying about you. You're not even curious to say, well, what were they saying? Because you've heard everything. Like, you couldn't say anything I haven't already heard. So enjoy. I don't live in that space anymore. And especially when you get to a place where you want to just live out the rest of your time healthy and well and at peace. I don't have time to, I mean, just getting involved in some argument with you could set me back several months. With the way this argument's going to stress me out, you're going to negatively affect my health. And I got to tell you, I don't love you enough for me to let you make me sick. You're not that, I mean, I'm not saying you're not an important person, but you're not on my radar screen enough for me to care what you think. So think it up. Enjoy. I mean, there's really, if you look at it, there's nearly, I wouldn't call it passive aggressive, but there's nearly, I wouldn't even call it sarcastic, but the word namaste is a very loaded word. Because the way you say it, it can be, that which is sacred in me honors that which is sacred in you. But it can also mean, it's like, oh, baby, believe whatever you want to believe. Enjoy. Just believe it. Ioni, but there's a lot of bless your little heart in namaste. There's a lot of, oh, that's adorable. You're so mad. Christians are so mad. Mad Christians. Who's a mad Christian? Who's a mad Christian? Namaste. And that's why I want to say, Calvin, if you're watching, if that's what you say, then stand by what you say and don't defend it and don't get sucked into arguments with people. If you're willing to say that about yourself, then change the vibration on it, because all it means, it just, you know, Wayne Dyer used to talk about the word sorcery a lot because he talked about the word source, and that's where, that's all it means. It's like, it's, you know, when Saul wanted to talk to Samuel, he went to the witch of Endor and she channeled Samuel. And Samuel prophesied to him. So the idea of burning witches at the stake, that came later. You know, but if you're going to say something, then just say it and put it out there and don't defend it all the time. Just like, it just is what it is. That's why if somebody challenges me with something, I just delete your comment. I'm like, that's cool. I liked on it and I saw it, but you're stinking up my page. So I'm going to remove that. It's not that I'm afraid. I could totally win an argument with you, but I don't want to do that. Like I said, when you go to my Instagram or Facebook page, when you click on there, like butterflies fly out and rainbows and sunlight, you hear angels singing. That's what I want, not like, oh God, what's he mad about now? Like, I already did that. Let me just say this before we wrap it up today. Where he says, we see our beliefs as truths. Now that's it right there. Because you believe something. That's why even, I know it was just a simple thing, but just him saying last night, you sure you want to take three? That's a simple thing, but without me being defensive, saying, you don't know how sore I am from working. I was like, well, you know what? That's a new thought I haven't considered. I will consider that. Okay. Okay. And that's how little changes have ultimately big results. Yes, Jack.
When I had my accident, Rachel ran over me with a car. I was.
How old was she? She was a kid.
She was 12.
He asked her to start with running. She didn't mean to. She ran over his head.
I was working on the brakes in the car. I backed it out of the garage. She got in the car on the passenger side, and then I went in to close the door. She put it in gear and backed up, and I ran out the side door and got in front of the car to try to stop it.
That's right. Wow.
She ran over me. When I woke up, I was behind the car.
Wow.
I just stuck my leg in a plastic bag. My dad took me to the hospital. People would come by and say, oh, man, what happened to you? I said, it's all good. I didn't look at my leg until I got out of the hospital. I didn't want my brain to see what my body was going through. I wanted my body to heal itself. And there was no ligaments, no tendons, no bones. No, half of my leg was gone, but
you're walking.
Yeah.
Wow.
The mind.
What he was saying, because basically, conventional wisdom says you should have lost your leg, and if what you're saying is, if I had looked at it, that's what my brain would have thought. I remember, I've shared this with you before, but, you know, John G. Lake, the apostle to South Africa, he was a doctor before he went in the ministry and had, some of this is disputed, but most of the biographers say that he had just, for the last 5 years of his ministry, had these amazing healing, that he opened those healing rooms in Seattle and just like raised people from the dead, all that kind of stuff. And he was in a little village in South Africa, and he was going from hut to hut, very primitive area, and praying for people and just having amazing results. One thing I read when the bubonic plague broke out, that these European scientists did a experiment with him where they would look at the plague under a microscope, and then he would hold it in his hand, and the plague actually died in his hand. Like he would talk. His theology was there was something higher than divine health; it was divine life, and it was very connected to what some of these teachers say. But what was interesting is he said his assistant was a young man. He would take with him into the people's homes to pray with them to interpret for him because he didn't speak their language. And he said, this one woman said, come and pray for my baby. And he said, when I went in the tent, immediately I saw that the baby's neck was broken. And he said, here I'm in this supernatural flow, but my medical understanding kicked in. And I thought, he said, all of a sudden the doctor in me said, this baby's going to die. And he said, I looked at the expression on my assistant's face and I realized he had no concept of the seriousness of it. So he looked at him and he said, it's time for you to learn how to pray for people. I'm going to step out and I want you to pray for this baby. This kid prays for the baby and the baby was healed. Now that was very interesting to me because here this is this guy that's very in tune with the supernatural, but he's having to compartmentalize his understanding, which is kind of what Dispenza was saying about what he knew about his broken vertebrae. He said, I'm going to end up not ever walking again. I've got to find another way to deal with this situation. Now, here's what I'm telling you. If, God forbid, something happens to you, did anybody tell you to do that? No. Maybe my teaching influenced you or whatever, but you had your own, I choose to not look at this leg. I didn't call you and say, don't look at that leg, because you've got to know that. No, exactly. Very important point. Yes. And that's huge. He said, I intentionally did not blame Rachel for it. Because if you had, there could be so much connected to that. Oh, I know why this happened. And then you start reading in all this other nonsense. Oh, I bet I know why that happened. No, just get well. Just get well. And when you get too many voices on there, those voices are still echoing on the inside of you. And I don't know why something will lodge specifically in a certain area of the body. I'm willing to be open to that and find out about it. But I know that things do get stuck somewhere. Like last week I was talking, I don't know why my left side, and several of you offered possibilities. And I thought, okay. And it actually did make it feel better to think about, I'll consider that. I don't want you to get legalistic about this kind of stuff. In Louise Hay's book, she's got this whole long list of symptoms. This is connected to this, whatever. And I'm careful with that kind of stuff because I don't want you to build a religion around anything. And you should know this about me. When people give me books and stuff, this happens a lot. People will give me a book and then they get mad at me because I didn't read it. Did you read that book I gave you? Now, let me tell you, I don't read a lot of books because I'm a visionary myself. When I say this, I don't mean to sound arrogant, but I don't read books, I write books. I mean, that's how I feel about it. I obviously quote other people all the time. So I'm very, I don't know if influence is the word. I look for confirmation. the thing that attracted me to Dispenza is he confirms things through neuroscience that I knew by the Spirit. That makes me feel stronger. It's like, oh, you're saying the same thing. You know, when you talk about thinking about how you would feel in the manifestation, that's Mark 11:24. I get that. Okay, good. That makes me stronger. I'm not a devotee of anybody's. And furthermore, I don't want you to be a devotee of mine. I don't want you just to blindly follow everything that I say. I want to lead you to the truth, but you might have other people that you read after. Fine. Nothing makes me happier. Like if somebody says, I'm really looking for a life coach, I can say, well, go see Dr. Rao. Like he may have expertise in an area that I don't have. That's a good thing. What are you laughing at? Oh. But that's a good thing. It never occurs to me to say, why aren't you? No, like he may have a voice like that's, I don't even think that way. So if you have people that you listen to or follow or whatever, if they're giving you something positive, go for it. And tell me, if there's something that really worked for you, tell me about it. If you've got something that you found out about diet or something, it may be something I'm eating that I don't know, maybe I shouldn't be, like, I'm open to, like, I don't understand why people don't want to be open. I want to be well, I want to live a long time in my right mind, and I want to shut up right now because it's time to shut up. Did you get anything out of this today? That's good. Let's all stand. What did you hear today? Well, we heard that Oreo's doing coconut now. I will prophesy this. I can't promise you that all aches and pains will be gone, but we as a group will be healthier at the beginning of April than we are right now. I truly believe that. Something's going to shift again. I felt it really strong when he was singing, Let There Be Light, Let There Be Light. I create my destiny. He's like, oh, wow. Something shifted. I don't know what it was. Something changed. And energy's going to flow. We're going to be well. Prosper and in health as our soul prospers. Remain standing.
Contributing to Metron is quick and easy. You can give anytime using any smartphone. Text the amount you'd like to donate to 404-620-5044. You will then receive a notification that you successfully completed your donation.
I'll be up to
you may also visit missionthenow.com and click the support tab to give there as well.
$35 out there.
When you contribute to Metron, you're also donating to the charity or organization of the month. Thank you for your investment into Metron.
Okay, good. You're making a check, make the JESM, and the awesome Mr. Danny will receive that. And if you have cash, pay it forward, bless somebody. You might want to bless Judah being here. And it's going to be a good week. I want you to be well. I'm not telling you to stop taking your medicine, but let's start trying to wean off as much as we can and go a healthier route and take care of yourself. Drink your water, get your sleep. Don't be mad at people. Some of those basic things, all right? You're going to have a beautiful day, a good night's sleep, and a very productive week. Wake up tomorrow saying, this is the day the Lord has enabled me to make. I will rejoice and be glad. Peace. I love you.